If you were to look at the Pacific Ocean from space, you might notice that you would not be able to see both sides of it at the same time. This is because at its widest, the Pacific is nearly 180 degrees across, more than 12,000 miles, or almost half the circumference of the Earth. North to south, from the Aleutian Islands to the Antarctic, it stretches another 10,000 miles. Taken as a whole, it is so big that you could fit all the land masses of Earth inside it, and there would still be room for another continent as large as North and South America combined. It is not simply the largest body of water on the planet, it is the largest single feature. For most of human history, no one could have known any of this. They could not have known how far the ocean extended or what bodies of land it might or might not contain. They could not have known that the distances between islands, comparatively small at the ocean's western edge, would stretch and stretch until they were thousands of miles wide. They could not have known that parts of the great ocean were completely empty, containing no land at all, or that the winds and weather in one region might be quite different from, even the reverse of, what was to be met up with in another part of the sea. For tens of thousands of years, long after humans had colonized its edges, the middle of the Pacific Ocean remained beyond the reach of man. That's from the opening of Sea People, The Puzzle of Polynesia by Christina Thompson. If you have ever stood on the shore of an open ocean, or maybe even a large lake, one of the Great Lakes perhaps, waves rolling in and then out, looked across and seen more water, more sky, then the concept, the idea, the dream of loading up your family, your home goods, your known life, and taking off across that open expanse of water is exhilarating, exciting, and scary. It's the call of the sea, of the open road, of the faraway land. It is the story of the Sea People. And so it is that today's book, called The Sea People, The Puzzle of Polynesia, sets out on its own quest to answer the question of how did people get to all those many small, faraway islands, and why would they even bother to do that in the first place? Could Australasians have populated the many far-flung islands of the Pacific through their own somewhat primitive technology and dreams of seeing what's on the other side of that next wave? Well, Sea People is a wonderful blend of the historical, the maybe could be, and the story of the monumental collision of the ancient Polynesian settlers with the heretofore unoccupied by human lands that they discovered, and the arrival many hundreds of years later of the next wave of human settlers, led by the estimable British Captain Cook. The European invasion was to have an equally jarring effect on the lands which they claimed, and even more so on the people who had first discovered and inhabited these islands so long ago. The lands we travel to and into are vast, and carry with them a whiff of romance and the exotic. From the Hawaiian Islands to the lands of New Zealand, from Fiji to Samoa, the centuries-old mystery, from at least a Western point of view, of Easter Island, with those great statues, the enigmatic people, the utter lack of trees on the island. The author makes it clear that while humans are always humans, the spirituality, the arts, the civilizations of the Polynesians were as far flung from the Europeans as the distance between their native lands. Our author pulls us into the book with her almost casual mention that she and her family were on crossing of the Pacific Ocean when they came upon a centuries-old ruin on the west coast of the large island of Hawaii, offering our first experience of Thompson's beautiful way with ideas and with words. After describing that encounter with that ancient artifact, she goes on to write this. For more than 1,000 years, Polynesians occupied these islands. And until the arrival of explorers like Captain Cook, they were the only people ever to have lived there. There are not many places on Earth about which one can say this, and yet it is true of every island in Polynesia. Until the arrival of European explorers, every one of these Polynesian cultures existed in splendid isolation from the rest of the world. This long sequestration is part of what makes Polynesia so fascinating to outsiders. A natural laboratory, some have called it, for the study of language change and genetic diversity and social evolution. What it means for insiders, on the other hand, is that there exists a great web of interconnectedness that continues to this day. According to New Zealand tradition, Seven is descended from a voyager named Pui, who sailed to New Zealand from the ancestral homeland of Ha'awiki in one of a fleet of eight great canoes. Whether or not this is really what happened, it is certainly true that his ancestors came to the islands from an island in eastern Polynesia, and that their ancestors came to that island from another island before that. The simplicity of this genealogy is stunning. No chaotic mixture of raiders and conquerors, no muddle of Vikings and Normans and Jutes. For centuries, Polynesians were the only people in this region of the world, and thus the only people Seven can be descended from are the ones who figured out how to cross thousands of miles of ocean in double-hulled voyaging canoes. To me, and not just to me, this is a big part of the fascination with this story. Few of us can trace our own lineages with such certainty going back so far, and it pleases me to think that my children share in this breathtaking genealogy. But what makes the whole thing truly fantastic, she writes, is what their ancestors had to do in order to find and colonize all of these islands. There is a reason the remote Pacific was the last place on Earth to be settled by humans. It was the most difficult, more daunting even than deserts or the ice. And yet somehow, Polynesians managed not just to find, but to colonize every habitable island in this vast sea. And so it is that she goes on to tell the story of the Pacific Islands and their peoples from a broad swath of history and thus from a broad swath of humanity as well. We go in search of Polynesian myths and self-storied history, with the caution that much of what we know about the Polynesians of first contact with the West is from Westerners, writing about the people who were so different from themselves. Still, the stories and the academic work we do have is fascinating. And today's book takes us back to the 19th century in Europe, where the great minds of the time came up with multiple origin stories for the Polynesian people. Didn't bother to ask the people themselves, most of them incorrectly based on peoples the Europeans respected or knew from history. That they were most likely wrong in all of their learned estimations ought to serve as a caution to us today, that learned folks aren't always correct in their estimations, and certainly not their surmises. The Western attempt to understand the Polynesians continued in the 20th century, we're told, when the methods of science were called upon for assistance. And the many stories, dances, musics of the islands were dismissed as impossible, or at least improbable, in terms of scientific study. And so it went, year after year, decade after decade, as scientists, anthropologists, great thinkers tried to figure out where did these Polynesian people come from. Well, now in the 21st century, an interweaving of these efforts seems to be taking place. As our author tells us, writing about these difficulties, the historian Judith Binney concluded that there are contradictions here that simply cannot be resolved. Quote, "We cannot translate other histories into our own," end quote, she wrote. Quote, "We can merely juxtapose them," end quote. There will always be a sense in which this is a European story, and a sense in which it is a Polynesian one as well. The best we can do is acknowledge this complexity. And as anthropologist Kenneth Emery once put it, quote, "keep our minds as sensitive as we can to every little breeze of thought that flows," end quote. When I look at this history, our author writes, what I see is not so much the steady march of knowledge toward some final point of truth, but the complicated process of trying to figure things out, a twisting, braided rope of intersecting narratives, a set of conversations between different people, with different bodies of knowledge, different ways of thinking, and different reasons for wanting to know. At some point, It dawned on me, she writes, that the whole thing was a kind of contact story, a story about people trying to peer, if not always to leap, across a cultural divide. That was certainly true of both Cook and Tupaya. It was true of the priests and chiefs, many nameless, who entrusted Europeans with their most sacred lore, and of the missionaries, travelers, and colonial officials who painstakingly wrote it all down. It was true, almost by definition, of the anthropologists whose very job it is to try to crack the code of someone else's way of thinking, and true, perhaps most obviously, of the experimental voyagers who, in pursuit of prehistory secrets, quite literally put their lives on the line. Speaking from a Polynesian perspective, our author offers this. The whole project presupposes an outsider perspective. It also arises from an intellectual tradition in which the events of the past, the facts of history, are essentially up for grabs. History, in the post-Enlightenment European tradition, is made up of elements that are theoretically available to anyone to do with as they see fit. But this idea conflicts with one that might be called a traditional Polynesian perspective about things that happened in the past. According to the Polynesian view, history is not an assortment of data points to be cherry-picked at will, but something much closer to a kind of intellectual property. Polynesian histories may be fluid, but not everyone is equally entitled to make use of them. As the Maori scholar O'Regan puts it, quote, "To inquire into my history, or that of my people, you must inquire into my genealogy. My ancestors may be dead, but they are also in me, and I am alive." The past is not a dead thing to be examined on the post-mortem branch of science without my consent. I am the primary proprietor of my past. We conclude this fascinating look at a world that is so different from ours, and yet, of course, has some touch points that we will all recognize as well, with a chapter aptly tied Coda, in which the author sums up what she explored with us in the previous 300-plus pages and offers some final questions along with a few new memories of her own. As she tells us, virtually everyone who has ever thought about the problem of Polynesian origins, the subject of this book, has been attracted to the subject by two different things. First, by the sheer wondrousness, the improbability of these migrations, of all those thousands of miles of open ocean, the landfalls so few and far between, and second, by the intellectual puzzle, the question of how such a story can ever really be known. For them, as for me, the appeal of this history is that it combines the romance of a great human adventure with a cool cerebral awareness. It is only by sifting through volumes of evidence that we will ever get close to knowing what happened in the dim, unreachable, mesmerizing, endlessly entrancing past. For ages upon ages, the islands of the remote Pacific, tips of volcanoes, rings of coral, remnants of ancient Gondwana, remain secluded far beyond the reach of man. No one set foot on their sun-bleached shores or penetrated their forests. Wind and rain eroded their mountains, she writes. Coral grew up and encircled their shores, birds and plants, floating on sea wrack or blown in by the wind, arrived and took root, evolving in curious and unexpected ways. The islands were eminently habitable, much more so than many of the places people had already settled. They were warm, lush, rarely subject to storm, and the seas around them teemed with life. But their location in the middle of the world's largest ocean kept them isolated, out of reach of human beings for tens of thousands of years. Then, one day, a canoe appeared, emerging out of the haze on the horizon. No one saw it from the beach. There was no one to see it. No one documented its arrival. No one knows who it was. But one moment, the sounds of the island were those of wind and sea and the cries of birds. And the next, the air was filled with voices and the thud of feet and the scrape and rumble of hulls being run up the shore. What a great way to end a book that is much a novel, as it is a piece of beautiful nonfiction writing, because we really don't know who these people were. We're still trying to find out both the Polynesians, the Europeans, kind of everyone who has been entranced, who's been fascinated by this vast open ocean land area. The Puzzle of Polynesia, titled Sea People. It's by Christina Thompson, and it's available at all of our fine local libraries where you can travel without leaving your armchair. Certainly also at the West Lafayette Public Library.